This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX Radio Football and StadiumScene.tv. I'm your host, Stel. And before we go into our interview, I'd just like to point you in the direction of justgiving.com/fundraising/shoot-the-defense. We are raising money for the Sickle Cell Society and supporting people with sickle cell disease to improve their overall quality of life. And it is a Champions League final first goal scorer sweepstakes. So all you have to do is email us your prediction, who's going to score first in the Champions League final and the minutes that the ball's going to hit the back of the net, and donate £10. That's your entry fee. And that's it. The winner will get a nice shiny trophy. So we're doing all of this for the Sickle Cell Society. There's no money going in our pockets. It's going straight to the charity. So thank you everyone that's been asking questions or donating. Now, my guest etched his name in playoff final history, having saved a vital penalty in Charlton's memorable shootout victory over Sunderland in 1998. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Sasa Ilić. Sasa, welcome to Shoot the Defense. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's nice and sunny here in Montenegro at the moment, which is a bit of a contrast, but it's been quite bad for these last few weeks here in this beautiful part of the world.
What's the weather like in terms of the temperature? What are we looking at, 23, 24?
Well, not really. I think today is about 18, 19. Okay. But it's usually this time of year, it's actually quite warm. But for some reason, the weather's gone a little bit haywire at the moment. But so I think everybody's experiencing, various different weathers, unlike what it's usually like at that time of year. But it's still quite beautiful and not complaining.
Oh, well, I don't blame you. Well, listen, you know what London's like. You know what the weather's like here.
Yeah,
so,
I know. So I'm catering from the English guests. So I just tell them, welcome to this part of the world with the English weather. So they seem to have a bit of a smile on their face, but they were looking forward to a nice sunny sort of period. But hopefully it will be coming soon.
I'm sure it'll pick up. Well, look, I know you joined Charlton in 97, but you studied at Brighton University. Tell me about your academic background.
Oh, God. So,
long story, eh?
Yugoslavia. So it's a short question, but requires a bit of a lengthy answer, but I'll try and make it as brief as possible. So I was playing football top level in Yugoslavia. This was during the breakup of Yugoslavia too, and I was studying at the same time. So just by visiting my sisters who were living in London at the time, met Mike Truston, who is a former pro, but it was he was made head coach for a team called St. Leonard's Stamcroft. And purely through him, I managed to organize a move from Yugoslavia to a non-league club in Brighton. And part of the condition was for them to pay for my final year at university, which was at Brighton University, and I was studying sports science, PE, so that was my final year, which I completed at Brighton University.
Very nice, very nice. Now, I hear you had a trial at Villa before joining Charlton. Now, if my memory serves me correct, that's when Milosevic and Churchill were there. So, what was that experience like?
Yeah. So, I mean, they're buddies of mine. I played against them and with them in Yugoslavia, so it was quite unexpected for me to just literally rock up after being asked to come on trial for Aston Villa. And I sort of gave them a bit of a nudge, asking them to be very polite when they're in front of me and not to try to score, just to make me look good. But I was there for 3 months. I was there for the whole sort of pre-season training. And that was quite a good team Aston Villa had at the time. They had Dwight York, Andy Townsend, late Hugo Hjorg. They had some really, really great players at the time. So I was there for literally 3 months on pre-season. Bosnich was number one goalkeeper at the time.
Blimey, that's one hell of a squad, and you wonder why they didn't do better than what they did. I mean, I remember having Sasha Cercic on the show a couple of years back, and the gentleman is a bit of a character. I know all about the party bus.
He's definitely a character. He's one of those players that you sometimes, well, especially in Serbia at the moment, he's more renowned for his antics rather than his footballing playing days. And he was an amazing player. He did amazingly well at Bolton before signing for Aston Villa, and he seemed to have gone all downhill after when he left Aston Villa for him.
That's right. Well, I hear you literally knocked on Charlton's door asking for a trial. Is that true?
That's right. So when I finished my final year at Bryce University and playing for St. Leonard's with this unsuccessful attempt at Villa, I was left pretty much without any opportunities. So then I just resorted to going from club to club and knocking on doors. And I just went to Charlton. My sisters were living in London at the time, so I was staying at my sister's place, sleeping on the couch, and decided to go to Charlton, knock on their door, and just ask for a trial.
Whereabouts was your sister living? I hear it was Putney, is that right?
Yes, that's correct, yeah. So you're very well informed. So I was in Putney, and I would literally just catch a train from Putney and make my way down to New Eltham, where the training ground was, or is at Charlton. And they sort of were a bit bemused, and they were sort of like, right, okay, you look like a goalkeeper, and I just literally walked in saying, right, okay, I want to get a trial. If you guys don't offer me a contract within 7 days, and then I'm off. So it was quite, brave of me to come with this sort of attitude, but I had complete belief in myself that I would do well. And just after that first day of training, they put me through the test. They put me with the second team at Charlton, the reserve team, and did really well. And they asked me to come back the following day, and the rest is history. And then within of that first week of training with Charlton, which was I think in mid October, on the 28th of January, I literally got my first break and started playing for the first team. So, and that year, we ended up getting to the player finals, and it was a great experience for me, to say the least. And the rest is history.
I can imagine. Now, you're saying that you signed in October and you had your pre-season at Aston Villa, so you were relatively fit at that point. Can you talk to me about, say, the final 3 months of the season? I believe you kept 9 clean sheets in a row on the way to the playoff final.
Yeah, it was... So when I unexpectedly got the chance to play in goals, it was my first, senior appearance for Charlton, so Alan Kirbishley wanted to make a few changes, and I sort of made it to being the reserve goalkeeper for a few games, and I think just wanted to change around a bit. We weren't really doing well on the pitch. We weren't getting results, and I was doing really, really well in the reserve team. I think I kept around about 8 or 9 clean sheets in the reserve team leading up to me playing for the for the senior squad. And it was a midweek game against Stoke. That was my first game, and literally just threw me in the fire, and I did really well. I think I got man of match of that game, and we ended up beating Stoke away 2-1. And leading up to, let's say, the playoff finals, I think it was about 14 or 15 games. Out of the 14, 15 games, I kept, it was 18 games. And out of those 18 games that I played, I kept 14 clean sheets, and I think it was like literally 9 clean sheets leading up to the Wembley playoff final.
And it was an impressive run of form from the team, because there were a few 1-0s, a couple of 2-0s, but then there were some resounding wins. There was Forest, there was the 4-2 win.
I think it was just one of those situations where everything just fell into place. Apart from myself, they got Eddie Yowes, and they got a couple of other signing players for the club. And we just gelled. It was just one of those things that just happened naturally. There was a good atmosphere in the club amongst the players. And once the results start coming in, things were becoming normal for us to keep a clean sheet and to win games. So, for me personally, I was just, loving the fact that I was playing in front of, big crowds, doing well personally on the pitch. But, I had a great bunch of teammates that were supporting me and obviously literally leading me through all those games leading up to the finals too. So it was just one of those things that everything just melted into place.
Mm. And there were a lot of experienced players in that squad, like your Mark Brights, Carl Lee Burns, very experienced heads.
Mark Kinsella, it was a bunch of players that were, I think, were extremely underrated at the time. But like I said, the whole team just blended and it was just great team sort of, the squad and the team just functioned really, really, really well, and the fun of us playing showed on the pitch too. So we weren't a team that were, aiming for a result and not to play well. We were actually playing some really good football.
Let's talk about the actual playoff final itself, because as you know, Derby County will play Aston Villa in this season's playoff final to reach the promised land, as they call it. Two very young squads. Now, you were quite inexperienced when it comes to playing at the highest of levels. Can you explain what was going on through your head when you were walking out at Wembley?
It was a bit of a fairy tale, to be honest with you. But playing at Wembley again, a lot of players, in the football world will dream about playing at Wembley. But leading up to the finals, we're doing so well. So my approach, maybe because I was in a bit of a bubble there, because I was enjoying my time at Charlton, all the players were doing really well, personally and collectively we were doing extremely well too. So, there was all this talk about playoff finals and, we're just, talking about it, but we didn't really take it, or me personally, I just thought it was just another game that we had to play. So I don't think I was aware of the significance at the time of what this would bring if we were to win, or the opposite side of that, or the flip side of the coin is, what would happen if we didn't get through. And Sunderland were definitely the favourites on the day. So in some ways, we weren't expected to go through, which was a huge helping hand for us, because, when you've got expectations to do well and to get through, the pressure does pile on, but we approach the game, if we win, great, if we don't, there's always next season. So there was a lot less stress on us than what there was for the Sunderland players, and I think that also helped us on the day.
Did that also help when it came to the penalties, though? Because obviously it's a high-pressure situation, you being in goal, I guess it was like, if you save it, you save it. If you don't, you're kind of not expected to as a goalkeeper, So
yeah. Well, again, it was funny, after the final whistle, after the extra time, I had all the players come up to me, it's up to you now, so I was just like, bloody hell, up to me now, oh my God, right, okay. So again, I wasn't really thinking, to be or not to be, I wasn't thinking that if I don't save a penalty, doomsday would arrive. So, as you know, the penalties were taken, and every penalty on both ends were going, were very, very well taken also. Mm. Obviously the final penalty, when Michael Gray stood up, he was like, right, okay, I did get my hand on one of the penalty shots.
And Noel Quinn's, I think.
I think it was Quinn's, he was Quinn's. I got my hand to it. I actually thought I had it in my hand, I actually thought I would make the save, but it did creep in at the end.
Mm.
So it was just going from, all the players were exhausted. I'm thinking, if I don't make a save or either end, if Perez didn't make a save, this would go to the point where we had to take the penalty shots. So, Michael Gray stepping up to the ball, I'm like, right, okay, I've got to do something. And I did find a 5p coin or a 10p coin on the floor, and I sort of flicked it maybe two penalties before that, and I'm like, okay, if it's heads, I'll dive to my left, if it's tails, I'll dive to my right, and fortunately for me, it did fall on the side, which prompted me to dive on my left, and it wasn't the greatest penalties of Michael Gray, but he did obviously won this for me and for Charlton at the time, and it was just a euphoric moment. It was just one of those things, we can't believe we just beat Sunderland on penalties, and next season we'll be playing in the Premiership.
Yeah, it was an incredible turn of events for you guys. And I know that beginning of that, the following season, you were top for a bit. I think two draws in a 5-0 win put you top.
Yeah, it was great. I think it was the first 10 games we were doing extremely well. But, you know, it's the beginning of the season. The season's quite long. But then, you know, after those first 10 games, I did experience a bit of a injury against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, where I got literally knocked out. Kasaragi tried to jump over me once I dived into his legs. And it actually wasn't Kasaragi, it was Richard Rufus that tried to jump over me. And he caught me in full sprint with his knee to my jaw, and that sort of knocked me out for a sixer. So I actually came to when I was ushered or taken to the hospital. And that did have a bit of an effect on me. Did lose a bit of weight post concussion syndrome and so on. But then, you know, a lot of things in the Premiership at the time. You know, if you don't take your opportunities, you're bound to get sort of, penalised. And a lot of games that were losing 1-0, or it was very close games, but we just couldn't convert, the goals from our end. And we're being penalised for one, let's say, half mistake or one insignificant sort of attack from the opponent. So it was a bit frustrating for us, especially coming from the Championship, we were pretty much winning every single game. So it was a bit of a shock factor also, us losing and coming to terms with, right, okay, we need to convert these goals in order to be in a position to win games.
Absolutely. And Sasha, I know you spent a bit of time at West Ham and Portsmouth after Charlton. Both squads had a few characters, to say the least. I know you didn't get much game time there, but I assume you have a few funny anecdotes about certain players.
Oh God, yeah, I could write a book. I mean,
you should.
When I was I was at West Ham. That's when Harry Redknapp was in charge. And when I look back, you know, those players that were playing for West Ham, it was pretty much, you know, three quarters of the English national team, or you know, the English squad. So you had Rio Ferdinand, you had Frank Lampard, you had Trevor Sinclair. Igor Štimac, who was playing for Croatia at the time, John Monku, Michael Carrick was there too, Joe Cole. I mean, you know, Jermaine Defoe, but he was coming through the ranks at the time. So when I look back at that squad, it was like half the English team were in that squad. And there were young players at the time coming through the ranks also, building their careers. And that was a very interesting, month on loan at West Ham.
Well, I'll be sure to read that book when it comes out.
Well, yeah, I have to go just make time to sit down and write it, I suppose.
Fantastic. Well, look, you've played against some top footballers. Are there any ones that stand out in particular?
Alan Shearer, for Mark Hughes when he was playing for Southampton at the time. You know, when you're sort of when you're playing against players in this, in particular, me coming from a non-league team, knocking at Charlton's door, all of a sudden, you know, a year and a bit before that, I was watching these players on TV, and all of a sudden, I'm playing in these fantastic stadiums, playing against these players that I used to sort of, you know, dream about playing against. So I remember, it was our second game, it was against Southampton, and I think we beat them 5-0. And I was like, right, okay, I need to get a shirt off one of these players. And I approached Mark Hughes and I said, God, is there any chance I can grab your shirt and get an autograph also? So I was like, oh my God, you know, playing against these players. And he was an amazing player. He was just even though he didn't score on the day, but he was this authority. You can just sense his ability. And, you know, if you gave him half a chance, he would definitely convert. Semi chance into a goal. So he was amazing. Alan Shearer again, just an amazing presence. His strength, his agility, and his determination. You can just sense that. Well, I sense that. You know, playing goals against them. So some amazing players, definitely amazing players at that time.
Fantastic. Well, as you know, Charlton and Doncaster face each other in the playoff semi-final, second leg tomorrow, and there's a chance they'll play Sunderland in the final. Lee Bowyer's worked miracles at the club, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's done extremely well. I mean, obviously, the club has gone through some troubled times and, you know, a lot of dissatisfaction amongst the fans. But Lebo's come in, he's done extremely well. He's put a squad together, and I think with his experience and, you know, a player that's been there and done that, he's definitely had a huge impact on the players. So fingers crossed that we'll do well against Doncaster, and maybe they can obviously have a repeat against Sunderland in the playoff final. So that'll be interesting to watch.
And hopefully you'll get an invite to the game.
It would be nice. Yeah, it would be definitely nice. Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
I'm sure it'll happen. Couple quick ones, Sasha, before I let you go. Mike Pieri from our Facebook group page has asked a question. He says, more so than in England, football and politics are intertwined in many European countries, not least in Eastern Europe. How difficult, therefore, was it for you and your countrymen to concentrate on your professional responsibilities at a time when NATO were bombing your country during the Kosovo conflict?
Yeah, very, very difficult time for me. It's a situation where obviously, as a young player, a pro, you know, me coming to Charlton and knocking on the door, and, you know, to be fair, you know, I have to be extremely grateful to Charlton to Alan Kirby for giving me the opportunity, which I think paid off for them as much as it did for me too. So obviously we got promoted in a premiership, and soon after, amongst, you know, the difficult time in the premiership, all this stuff happened with Kosovo, NATO bombing, and my parents were living at the time in Serbia. So it was definitely an extremely difficult time for me, dealing with obviously playing the top league, coming to terms with everything that was happening in Yugoslavia, or it was called Yugoslavia back then. So it was difficult, you know, and a lot of players that were, you know, that were from Yugoslavia or Serbia were asked by the government, which is completely absurd, to boycott their clubs, and you know, most of these players would go through the traditional way of going from their teams in Yugoslavia to, let's say, you know, to European clubs, but you know, I just thought that approach, boycotting the football clubs, especially the football clubs who are paying your wages, I just thought it was wrong for me to do something like that, and I sort of stood against that, and I said, listen, I'm a professional player. Whatever I stand for, whatever's happening in that part of the world, in Yugoslavia, the best thing I can do is be someone that could represent the people of Yugoslavia, because at the end of the day, it's the ordinary people from whichever country, they're not at fault what's happening. It's usually the politicians and the leading people that will lead the country that, you know, create these scenes and situations, and it's ordinary people that suffer at the end of the day. So my approach and my decision was to continue, not to boycott Charlton, and I think it would have been completely wrong if I did so. And I thought, well, no, the best thing I can do is just put a black armband and represent, obviously, Charlton, as I would do, and also represent the people of Yugoslavia at the time, and to be the best person or the best player on the pitch. And if I do play well, it is a, you know, for me it was a situation where I would represent Charlton, represent the people of Yugoslavia at the time, and to be the best on the pitch. And if I do well, it would give me a platform for me to voice my opinion of the things that were happening in Yugoslavia at the time. So I have to say it was extremely difficult. It was a very, very difficult situation for me. I couldn't get hold of my parents, my family, and family members and friends. So I wasn't quite sure what was happening over there, and obviously I had to continue playing for the club, and obviously be a player that would represent the club and the people of Yugoslavia at the time. So that's what I did.
Well, it's a testament to your professionalism and character that you're able to fight through it, so to speak.
Yeah, well, I have to say it was a dark period for me, definitely. So, but you know, like everything passes, and you know, time and you know, events do move on. So, but yeah, I got through it at the end.
Absolutely. And one more question before I let you go, Sasha. Talking about moving on, there's one thing I'd really like to talk to you about. And I'm just one of those people where when they go on holiday, it's got to be a holiday, as in a proper break. I've got relatives in Cyprus. I can't go back to Cyprus because it's not a holiday. You've got to visit this one, you've got to visit that one. Yeah, and if you don't go that one, you know how offended people can get. Talk to me about your latest venture, Monte Bay Retreat.
Yeah, so Monte Bay Retreat is something that I put my heart and soul. I bought a place called Pedas, a few years ago, and leading up to me coming to Montenegro to start this new venture, I was pretty much in 2009 going through a very rough time in my life. At the time, I was going through a divorce. My businesses that I was running at the time sort of collapsed because of the credit crunch. My father passed away and this house in Montenegro burnt down. So everything that could have happened in 2009 actually happened. So it was 2-3 years after that, living in London, not knowing what to do. I wasn't working. Obviously, if you're not working in London or in the UK and not having an income, you know, things can get a bit expensive and you start sort of, you know, diving into your savings and investments that you made. So it was a conscious decision that I had to make at the time. I had to make a change in my life, and I just decided to come to Montenegro, start a new venture, and build something which I think would do well. And the concept of Monte Bay Retreat is basically for people that, and it's mainly catered for, let's say, couples. It's an adult-only boutique hotel. So I just created this little sanctuary, little retreat where people can get away. And you know, I don't really tell my guests I used to play football, but the ones that know of me and do a bit of research, they find out that I used to play football. So they like to be sitting next to me over a glass of wine, telling them all these anecdotes, football stories. And it's working really, really well. So I think we're one of the highest, best reviewed boutique hotels in Montenegro at the moment, which is fantastic. So, but yeah, whenever you get a chance, you're more than welcome to pop by and to see it yourself.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, I've heard great things about Montenegro. I know there's St. Nicola Church, which apparently you pay like €1 to climb 55 metres up the bell tower, which is, I'm a bit scared of heights, to be fair.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is I haven't done it myself. I tend to send my guests to do it, but they do take some amazing pictures, which they send to me also. But it is a beautiful part of the world. It's you know, the food is amazing. The climate, generally speaking, not to say these last few weeks has been a bit horrible, but the climate here it's a Mediterranean climate. It's nice and warm. There's so much to see and do. You've got, you know, such a small country, you've got microclimates all over the place, where you've got the biggest fjord outside Norway, you've got the deepest canyon outside the Grand Canyon, you've got one of the biggest lakes in Europe, and the population of Montenegro is like 600,000 people, so a lot to see and do. There's lovely, amazing national parks. The coastline is absolutely beautiful, to crystal clear waters. So there's nothing really you can't see and experience, and to thoroughly enjoy yourself and to escape, obviously, somewhere to go with your loved one to completely relax and enjoy yourself.
Well, it's on my to-do list, Sasha. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Great stuff. Well, mate, thank you ever so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. I don't know if you use any social media like Twitter or Facebook, anything like that. Is there any way our listeners can get hold of you if they've got any questions or whatnot?
I'm terrible with this social media, I have to admit. Something that I need to work on, but I just don't have the patience to click on these buttons on my phone. I do have an Instagram page with Monte Bay Retreat. I am on Facebook, but I sort of spell my name slightly differently.
That's more personal.
But yeah, on Facebook, I'm available. But if you do Google Monte Bay Retreat, I think there is a web page on Monte Bay Retreat. But yeah, it's easy to find if somebody's determined to find me, I suppose.
Fantastic. Well, Sasha, again, thank you ever so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. And hopefully we can catch up some point soon.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to coming visiting Montenegro.
Fantastic. I'll be there. Thank you very much.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, then. Cheers, thank you very much.
You have a good afternoon. Cheers. Thank you very much.
You too.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.